He has his own podcast. What is it, y'all? Get my shit together.
Welcome to the Getting My Act Together podcast for February 6, 2024. I hope your week is off to a great start, and I hope you can hear my Chobani twins yelling at each other in the background. What are we doing here? You may be able to tell that I'm a little bit under the weather. I was hit with the atmospheric river of runny nose. I'm a little under the weather, so today's podcast is merely going to be a podcast from a few years ago. I don't know, not merely, maybe it'll be entertaining. What can I say? I hope you enjoy it, and I hope that I feel much better, certainly improved by Friday, and I look forward to speaking with you then. Have a great week, and I will talk to you on this Friday, and I'll tell you all about the exciting things going on in the world. All right, bye. Welcome to the Getting My Act Together podcast for April 6, 2021. I hope your week is off to a great start. I am really grateful that you listen to this program. I think we have something here, you and I, and I really appreciate that you tell people about it, because that's the only way that it moves right now. My reach, it's organic growth. As I've said before, I just want it to happen naturally without a whole lot of, hey, look at my podcast, come check me out at Spotify or wherever, it works for me, and I appreciate you telling people about it. You, of course, can share on social media. This is the best, most insightful, hilarious, timely podcast from another middle-aged white dude talking in his basement that there is. So please go support him. You're welcome to do that. But I appreciate you doing what you can to spread the word. That's been very helpful. And this weekend, you can, if you're in Atlanta, not traveling at the moment, but look forward to doing that again. This weekend, I'm telling jokes in Midtown Atlanta at the Laughing Skull Lounge Friday and Saturday nights. Multiple shows on each night, I believe. So come say hello. Get out of the house. It seems like more and more people are getting vaccinated. Excuse me. So come see me tell jokes right across the street from Bulldogs. Yeah, Bulldogs, where you go in a pup, but you come out a man. Well, the legendary Bulldogs. You know what? Pre-game at Bulldogs, and then come over and hear some jokes. Or come listen to some jokes, and then go become a different person. Or become your true self, for that matter, at Bulldogs, right across the street from the Laughing Skull Lounge. The legendary Bulldogs. All right, what is... One of our sponsors, Bulldogs. Oh, speaking of sponsors, you know that I'm very fond of my farmer's market, which has Eggman, according to my daughter. We go see Grateful Pastures Farm is where I get my eggs. They are the best $10 eggs you can buy. But it seems like they're not owned by Monsanto or Archer Daniels Midland. So... I'm happy to torch off. What's $10 to a guy like me? As a friend of mine used to say, what's $5 to a guy like you? He's throwing nickels around like they're manhole covers. But I went to the Eggman. My daughter and I went to Farmer's Market on Saturday, and Eggman was out of eggs. And I took it personally. We'll get up and go earlier. Yeah, well, we tried, but for anybody who has a child knows, anybody with a child knows, it takes a long time sometimes to just get out of the house. I don't know if I've ever said this on here, but people say, oh my gosh, enjoy it while it lasts, when they're young. Oh my gosh, it's the greatest. It just goes so fast, it flies right by. And it does. And the reason it does fly by is because everything takes so fucking long. Shoes, socks, diaper, clothes, that thing you're going to drag along with us. You want to walk, don't want to walk, get in the... Oh, it's great, but it just, everything takes a long time. Did you brush your teeth? No, thank you. But we got up there, and Eggman, Grateful Pastures of Mansfield, Georgia, and this is like the third or fourth time I've mentioned them on here, so I do look forward to a dozen eggs coming my way one of these days. Grateful Pastures, Mansfield, Georgia. They're out of eggs. I also don't know if I've mentioned on here, but my daughter with her two-year-old brain is taking more and more in and knows that when we knows our little routine when we are up at farmer's market. It's a pretty carb-heavy day. We get eggs, and then we get bread, and then we get tortilla chips. So it's a little, or maybe it's a starchy day. But I'll say to her, who are we going to see at farmer's market? And she'll say, like, chip guy, or bread ladies, or egg man. And lately, though, the last few weeks, she has said no Eggman, which brings me tremendous delight that she doesn't want to see him. No, everything will be fine except for Eggman. And then eventually, of course, it's just like a shy two-year-old thing. Then she'll see him and she'll kind of like turn away and then she'll smile again and, you know, show the Eggman a little leg for the egg. A couple weeks ago, though, when we were up there, I said, okay, we won't see the Eggman. So I went up to his booth and I defiantly turned her stroller away from the Eggman. So her back of the stroller was to the Eggman, sort of in, you know, her moment of Mexico City having a fist in the air and her head down. She just defiantly was like, you know, no thank you, Eggman. And I told the Eggman's partner, a woman who was helping him out, I said, yeah, she just doesn't want to see Eggman. And it made the woman's year. She got such a kick out of it. Because then we just started riffing, like, you know, my daughter, just there's something sketchy about that dude. And you can tell, you work with him. And we're, anyway, she thought it was the greatest thing ever. She felt so much joy that a two-year-old was shunning her coworker. But Eggman was out of eggs, which Grateful Pastures I took personally, because I feel like I even wore a Grateful Pastures shirt on stage a couple weeks ago, and we tried to get a photo of it to further support the egg mission, and the photos did not come out well. But consistent with that, my set sucked also. So no photo, and then also not a great time on stage. Because every comic, you know, you remember bad sets. Like, you remember some good sets. I remember I don't know, I don't dwell on the bad sets, but I probably remember them more. I don't know. Maybe if I remember the good ones or the bad, doesn't, whatever. But there are times where you'll see a photo of yourself, and maybe it's like a good photo, and you're like, hey, that's one I can use for whatever purpose. But also you're like, that was not the most fun set. Or a photo where you look like garbage and you're like, oh man, I had a really good time that time. Well, yeah, dude, don't you know that people take pictures in front of fake airplanes on Instagram? I know, I'm just saying. You don't always trust what you see. So we had to get eggs from somebody else. And that means that the calculus then is, do we get from this one dude who is always the dude like, or at least he's sitting where this dude used to be. There used to be another egg guy across the parking lot. And he used to sit over there in his booth and almost like just like be waiting for people to ask him if he had eggs so he could say, no, sorry, I'm all sold out. Well, then why don't you pack up your fucking crate and go home? Well, because he's trying to flex. I get it. Like, these eggs are the shit. You should get up earlier and get your daughter in the stroller and move up here faster. But he used to just have, like, and I'm sitting here with my left arm slung over the back of a chair, like, yeah, I'm a douchebag. But that's what he would kind of do it, but like in a organic artisanal farmer type way. Like, oh hey, good to see you. Do you have any more eggs? Sorry, we're all out. Yeah, we move them along. I'm just sitting here. What? What are you sitting there for? What, signing autographs? Maybe trying to catch a little boy or a girl. Not like a little boy. I mean, like, I'm not trying to say he's a straight dude or not. I don't know what he is. But maybe he's just like, this is my job. I vend eggs. I'm the vendor. And I did my job really well today. That means I have some good product. Who's trying to fuck? I don't know what he's doing. But, you know, a young man would do something like that. An older man would just be like, now I can go home and go back to sleep. I can go take a morning nap. I fell asleep yesterday for about 19 minutes. And I woke up ready to bench press the world. My goodness, those little mini power naps, I guess, if you can just grab. Certainly now, as with a small kid, I fall asleep I can fall asleep like my sister, who is, I can fall asleep like this. You mean like that? Yeah, like this. My sister can fall asleep like that. My sister, who has a big job and has always had a big job, can work like 100 hours, and then as soon as she's finished work, she can close her eyes like a machine. I've told her before, she's like the next step in capitalist evolution. She can just close her eyes, and everything that happened during her 16-hour day or whatever it is, 19-hour work day, goes away, or it doesn't go away, it just stops, and it doesn't keep her up. She closes her eyes, and she wakes up immediately, or not immediately, exactly at the appointed time. I said, you're going to marry that dude who can see in the dark, and you guys are going to make some fucking hardworking kids. But man, those power naps. So anyway, I can fall asleep very quickly. Yeah, dude, you were back in the egg stall. I know. But I can fall asleep pretty quickly, and they do change the game. I don't know, and you know, this is the 65th one of these podcasts that I'm going to do for the rest of my life. You're going to hear probably a lot of things loop around on themselves. I'm just one man with one set of experiences. But years ago, I remember hearing or reading Ben Stiller saying in some article about some piece of advice he got from his dad, in his late father, rest in peace. His dad said, you know, when you don't feel well or you're depressed or something like, what do you do? And I'm pretty sure his answer was take a nap. There might have been one other thing, like drink a glass of water or work out or something. But his dad said, take a nap. And that will set you free. And it really is true. And I think about that. I think about Ben Stiller. I think it's very true. You're like, well, yeah, you fucking idiot. It's good that you can, you know, put two and two together. I've been an intermittent napper across my life. But now that I have a child, I steal minutes when I can. If I can fall asleep, like I said, for 11 minutes, I will do that. No sweat. Yesterday was like 19 minutes, and I woke up like, oh my gosh, I am going to go back to school. I'm going to work for Habitat for Humanity. I just felt just compelled to seize the day. So I started drinking. No, I didn't. We had a nice, all right, back to the egg. I used to, before I had a relationship with Eggman, I would consider this other guy who was flexing on being out of eggs. And then there was another guy, there is still another guy at the front of the farmer's market that you see when you walk in from our entrance. He's an older dude, which makes me think I want to help an older dude, I guess, or should I help the young guy who's trying to build his business? But the older guy takes himself out of the running, because he's one of those people who doesn't wear his mask over his nose. A year into the pandemic. And I don't know why he doesn't do that. I don't know why those fucking... I mean, I know, because you're weak. That's all it is. You're weak and you don't care. Because none of us want... This is the thing. Nobody wants to wear the mask, dude. And you know what? If we could wear it around our chin so we could talk, and we could breathe through our mouths and breathe through our noses, we would do that. But good old Tony Fauci said that's not the way to do it. Anyway, so the fact that he wears his mask down below his nose takes him out of the running. So ultimately, I don't know if it is the guy who was flexing, but that dog next door, neighbor who listens to the podcast, I don't know if it's his dog or not. But I bought eggs from the man who was occupying the place of the guy who used to flex. And the eggs are delicious. And that's a great story, I realize. And somehow, though, it connects to Sunday. Get your head around this. Sunday, 2 days ago, 2.5 billion people, about a third of the world's population, celebrated a man who was nailed to a cross and then also run through with a spear, I've been told, dying and coming back to life 3 days later. I don't have word. What are we talking about here? That's what I didn't know this until a couple years ago when I asked a friend of mine who fell from the Catholic Church. I'm like, what does Easter really celebrate? And he said it celebrates nailed to a cross, then also stabbed again, and then he goes to sleep for 3 days, and then just pops up like, what's up? It's me, 3 days later. And then my friend also told me, and I don't know this, and if you listen to this podcast, I hope you are religious, and I hope you are not religious, and I hope you're questioning religiosity and its significance in the world. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm glad you're here. I'm just saying that's, for somebody who grew up without it, like, that's a lot to get your head around. My friend said also, if you do not believe that story, then you reject the rest of it. And you're like, well, your friend's a fucking asshole. Well, of course he is. He's my friend. He's going to have that tendency in him. It is more realistic. It's more realistic to think that a 6 foot tall bunny exists. Just, we can modify genes. We can build bigger, better bunnies. That is more realistic than the source of the holiday. And you know what is so funny? Not so funny. What is so upside down to me is that by me just talking about this, if anybody's uncomfortable and is like, you know, you shouldn't be talking or just, you know, accept it, that I'm the fucking asshole. That's it. When really, if we did it under any other circumstance, hey, look, this ladder popped up and did some jumping jacks the other day. You would think but that's what's so fascinating about it. You would think I'd lost the plot, but a third of the world's population, and you're gonna, well, I don't know, it's maybe I'm not. I feel like to anyone who, I'm not trying to push your buttons, I'm trying to get your head around my head, in that I'm like, really, that's what happened? And everybody's like, dude, just fucking get with the program. That's what I feel, because I only feel judged by religious people. I don't feel judged by non-religious people. And so and that's pervasive. It comes through in unconscious ways. It comes through in very conscious ways. Like, my neighbor who's religious always is making some comment about how I'm not religious. Always some sort of dig. Well, you wouldn't want your daughter to take swimming lessons there because, you know, it's all holy water. Which is not a bad joke, let's be honest, but I guess what I'm trying to get my head around, or want you to get your head around my head, is the idea that just simply going, isn't this kind of, is this what we're really talking about? People are like, yeah, dude, just, you know, this is what it is. And there will be bank holidays because of it. Fucking insane. Just say what it is. It's fucking insane. That's what it is. It's insane. It's detached from reality. I know it is, but it's faith. It's still fucking insane. You have faith in insanity. Anyway, and scene. But come on, man. Come on. Come on, guys. I'm not saying come on and do anything, but I just don't want to have to feel like an outcast for going like, what are we talking about here? This is what this is all about. He popped up 3 days later. It only happened once, huh? And there's no evidence of it. Okay, that's the world we live in. An evidence-free world. I don't know. Anyway, I'm sorry to get to... I'm sorry. What am I sorry for? I didn't mean to sound polemical. Is that a word? I know it's a word. I don't know if it's what I'm doing. Moving along. How do you move along from that? Well, you've bombed before. You know how you move on. You mentioned that. Starting April 13th, that's right, 1 week from today, Limerick Comedy returns. There's some good news. Isn't that great? My beloved show in Atlanta, in the Virginia Highland neighborhood of Atlanta, Georgia, returns Tuesday, April 13th. Tuesday, April 13th, Limerick Comedy is back. We used to do the main show at 10 o'clock. People in Atlanta, comics in Atlanta know this, but for those of you listening around the world, and shout out to y'all, I appreciate it, and around the country, it's a tradition that's been going on for 10 years, Limerick Comedy. I have been responsible for the show for the last couple years. Needless to say, one of those years has been without comedy. But it's kind of an institution because it brings together on Tuesday night, there's a main show from 10 to 11:30. I host it and book it, and I go up and just talk, tell jokes, bullshit. And then the lineup comes on and they do their sets, and as the show goes longer and longer, more and more people fill into this bar, this tavern with a big picture window right behind the stage, so people can stop on the street and see the performers' backs. And then the performer can turn around and they can talk shit to them or they can try to bark them in. But as the show goes on and it gets closer and closer to 11:30, when the feature comic comes on and usually just murders, the bar is getting pretty full, and it's full of people who like comedy, and it's also full of a lot of comics from around town, because after the main show, we do what's called the lightning round, and it's an open mic where every comic in the room can come up and do 2 minutes, and it's great, and we do it until infinity. It usually goes from 11:30 to like 12:45. Something like that. So It's a good vibe because it brings together different scenes, I feel like. Different, you know. There'll be some suburban, you know, what are called OTP comics. There'll be white hipster comics, black comics, all sorts of different people in this room doing comedy. And historically it's been 10 o'clock to 11:30 for the main show. And then like a 10-minute break, and then we do the lightning round. But on the 13th, it's coming back at 9 p.m. And we're going to do a main show from 9 to 10:30 just to have like a soft opening. But there are going to be some killers on this show. I don't want to announce it yet because I'm still trying to confirm my feature comic, who, if she can confirm, fucking let me know. No, she's very busy and in the industry, as they say. So it'll be a last minute kind of setup situation. But even if she can't make it, the show's going to be great. There are other killers on there as well. But yeah, Limerick Comedy coming back at 9 o'clock April 13th. Maybe the thing I missed more than any other in comedy during the pandemic, Limerick Comedy. So yeah, very, very excited about that. By the way, if I haven't made it clear, it's at the Limerick Junction Irish Pub in Virginia Highland. Google me. Zone 4. No. If you've never been, this is the perfect time to build a new good habit. Get out of the house. You can sneak out, go see a comedy show that's always been free. Always been free. You can see a comedy show at 9 o'clock, and you can be back home at 11. How great is that? Doable. Very doable. And very excitingly, also, we are having some Limerick Comedy t-shirts made. I don't know if they'll be ready for the 13th, but maybe. They have a very, very skilled, some of the best, finest loom people. They're looming. They're what are they doing? I don't know. They're making the goddamn t-shirts, and I'm very excited about that. And they will be for sale for a very reasonable price. And look forward to all of it. I was doing that Trump impression, and that reminded me of a project I've mentioned previously where I somehow was playing a character who was schizophrenic and was half Obama and half Trump. Which reminds me, I am filming something this weekend. I mentioned a long time ago that I was playing a white guy that everyone else is going to have revenge on. Kind of typecast. And I'm doing some filming on Saturday afternoon, I think. Okay, well, great. Speaking of being white, I did a show. I mentioned I was doing a show. Speaking of being white, let me tell you some of the complexity. You know what people did not like when I said once on stage? I've said it a couple times. It's, you know, it is hard being a white man. Which unquestionably it is. Life is hard. I was making a joke that it's harder being everything else, but they didn't want to hear that. They were like, well, you better just said that fucking part sooner, you prick. I was being a prick is exactly right. I was saying, like, life is hard. Like, absolute terms, life is hard. I didn't say relative. Anyway. Speaking of being white, I mentioned I did that show I was doing that show last Friday. I was going to do that show. What are you saying? You know what? Have some more coffee, dude. That's what it is. All the cars in your brain are colliding. I did the show in Duluth at the Red Clay Theater, which is a beautiful theater and a really seemingly redone and snazzy looking downtown for Duluth. And the host brought me up and said, your next comic is white. Which, naturally, I want the people to be... I want them to think about that first when they see me. I don't want them to listen to my words. I want them to... I might have even said, because he's, like I mentioned, of Nigerian descent. And he was... The crowd was... This is great. The crowd was largely black. And when I say largely, I mean a majority of the crowd. I'm not saying the crowd was large. Let's be clear. It was a majority of the crowd was black. Which, I gotta tell you, as a performer, is such a relief. When you go to these suburban shows, and it's my expectation and my mental model, for these shows out in the suburbs of exurbs, or whatever they're called, outside of Atlanta, where it gets whiter and politically more red, it's always just a little more tense, because they're like, you damn little hippie, or I don't know what they're thinking, and it's probably me just being patronizing and judging them, but I think, you know, it's going to be like a lot of middle-aged conservative folks, and that's always It is what it is. They're fucking sensitive. Everybody's sensitive except black people. Not except black people. Among the audiences that I primarily play for, black people are not sensitive. Well, they've fucking been through a lot, dude. They have bigger fish to fry than being, whatever, PC or not PC. You know what I'm saying? But man, my people, the white liberals, so uptight. And white conservatives, super, 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 super uptight as well. And neither one, well, why don't you just tell more jokes about Walmart or dolphins? I don't know. You gotta write what you know. And I don't go to Walmart. I had a Walmart joke, but it became a racial joke. Like to hear it? Here it goes. Stopped and I asked a guy in Walmart. I was walking around Walmart, looking all around for one thing before I got out of there. A tube of toothpaste, as it was. I couldn't find it. And there were a million employees, but nobody would make eye contact with me. That's Walmart customer service. Finally, I get this dude's attention. And I said, "Hey, man, where is the toothpaste?" And he said, "Man, I don't even know." Like, dude, it's your job. I mean, you have such a good vantage point here. You have all the inside information. And based on your appearance, you should know. And then another punchline was like, "Oh, shit, that must be what black people feel like all the time, walking around with a sea of people indifferent to their needs." Which, that sounds a little preachy, and what I believe in my heart. And then there's another part about where I say, white people making that white people face. And, you know, black people like to joke, white people didn't really like the joke, because it sells out my group. But you need a certain special type of disloyalty to do the kind of comedy that I do. You need to be white and not appreciate the contributions of the people that came before you. All right. This sounds all like tossy. Sorry. But my apprehension of doing just like doing a brewery show or a hipster show, it's like, oh gosh, who's going to start crying first and then going out and doing, this is fair and balanced. I hate performing for white people. No, not all white people. I hate performing. I don't hate performing. It's additionally challenging performing for white liberals and white conservatives. And if you're not one of those things exclusively, or you have a sense of humor and you can laugh about yourself, then I like playing for you. But those two groups, it's just stressful because they're looking to be offended. You know what they're looking to do? They're looking to, I believe, or it's just me, I think they're looking to figure out how you are the opponent. Does that make sense? They don't assume positive intent. So a hipster, or not, you know, a white liberal who doesn't know any people of color, but signals well, a white liberal looks at me, and they're like, that guy looks like whatever, my dad vibe, my whatever you project into me. They're trying to figure out how I am, like the not on their team, how I am not like them, and they are better than me, and therefore they're pretty fucking self-righteous, white liberals. I mean, that's not a... You know what? And on the flip side, so are white conservatives. They're compelled by religion. That's why nobody wants to talk about religion, because you guys are all fucking driven by it. But the white liberals are looking at trying to figure out how I am not like them. And you know what? I'm not. So shout out to them, even though we vote the same way and we care about the same things. I feel like the white conservatives are trying to figure out, like, when I say different than me, white liberals are trying to figure out how I am, I don't know, racist or homophobic, transphobic, whatever it is. How I am, you know, and it's the coffee and it's the lateness of the podcast, I suppose. But I think they're trying to figure out how they are more evolved than I am. And if I'm really being cynical, I think they're trying to figure out how they are more evolved than I am so they can feel better about themselves. So they can be a better class of white person. A better brand of white. Jesus Christ, who wants to listen to this? Well, I like talking about it, and apparently some people do, so thank you very much. And then on the other hand, the white conservatives, I think, are trying to figure out how I am not like them. But they're trying to do it in a way where they can therefore say I'm not like them and then dismiss everything that I say subsequent to that. I don't know if it's like, I don't feel like they feel like they're better than me. Like, you know, brewery crowds or hipster crowds. They have like an immense smugness, which is very strange because I imagine many of them grew up insecure and picked on, and they just do the same thing. They project their judgmentalness and insecurity, as you know, I'm an expert on that, on other people. But I don't feel like the conservatives think that they're better than me. I think what they think they're trying to do, and yeah, this is fun when you walk out on stage, hey, what's up, everybody? Who's ever watched Pornhub or something? I'm just saying it's a lot to keep in mind and then forget and dismiss and just do your act and let the chips fall where they may, because that's what you should fucking do. And that's what I do. I'm just telling you my perception of the two audiences. And you're like, dude, it's okay to take a breath. It's fine. I know you're all gacked up on that coffee right now. I feel like the conservative audiences don't feel like they're better than me, but I feel like they're finding something. They're looking for something in my act to tell them that I am not one of them. And I am not. So shout out to them. But there are lots of people who are not me that I just don't dismiss everything that they say. But I feel like in this charged political country in which we live, they're looking to find something with which that signals I am not one of them. I don't vote the same way. I don't read the same scripture. So that they can then dismiss everything that I say subsequent to that. So, I think I have a good read on both of those audiences. Or this is insecurity manifesting itself across the spectrum. But if you're a comic who listens to this and you have thoughts on this, email the podcast, yesjoesmith@gmail.com, because that's what I feel. Anyway, I get to Duluth expecting it to be one of those conservative, middle-aged white crowds. And if I, you know, just talk about my wife and my sex life, or I talk about, you know, having a kid or something like that, it's going to just be fine for them. They're going to be, you know, there's nothing in the ballpark that suggests politics. But also, I do like to poke the bear a little bit, so there will be a tendency for me to say, how close can I get to their blood boiling point? And by the way, if you're not a performer, or if you are like, the realest of the real, you would say, well, just fucking say your truth, and you're right. But there are sometimes you're doing shows where it's not like, you're not trying to be Bill Hicks and or Dave Chappelle and just drop knowledge on all these fucking people. There are times where someone's like, hey, do you want to do my show? Do 20 minutes at the end of it and not make everyone uncomfortable. You know, so it's kind of like taking one for the team. If that makes sense. Like, there is your act. And then you're going to do parts of it over here because you know that's going to, you know, I don't want to, if somebody has me do a show on which there are, the other night there were like three other comics, I don't want to tank the show for those other people. If you're going to come see me for an hour, I'm going to go tell you everything I think, and it's going to be closer to this podcast, except with jokes. So there was a great relief when I got up there, and I was expecting it to be a lot of, you know, nice denim. And it turned out the crowd was primarily black folks. And I just all of a sudden was like, whew. It was a different level of Which, don't get me wrong, you can perform for different groups of black people, and it can be very, very stressful. Because they're like, motherfucker, you haven't made me laugh in 9 seconds. Hurry up. And, you know, there's all sorts of things you can and can't talk about in different types of rooms. All types of rooms. Hipster rooms, black rooms, all different things. But the much belabored point is I was relieved that the crowd was mostly black. So I think the host might have been talking, who is Nigerian, and was talking, black, was talking about, it being just us black folks, he was saying. And so I might have even, I think the two comics before me, at least one, the comic who was right before me was a black dude, Tyrone Dixon, who I love. It's great to see him. Ty Dixon. So it was like we're among each other, and then the host like says, oh, by the way, your next comic is white, and he's a friend, and I might have even told him to do that or say something about it, but generally speaking, they'll figure that out when they see me. He said he's white, but he's funny. Funny for a white guy, I think is what that means. If you liked Tyrone, you're gonna love Joe. And it was a good time. I had a fun time, and I riffed on it right at the beginning. I don't remember what I said. And well, dude, are you gonna stop and tell us the brilliant thing you said to begin the show, and show us how you're the coolest white guy ever? No, that's not my goal. But what I wanted to mention about that is, apparently it was a clean show. I did not know that. And the host, again, a friend, more than a comedy friend, a real friend, he was under the impression he'd expressed that to me. And I was under the impression he had not expressed that to me. So I was like 7 minutes into my set, and I noticed him to the side of the stage, like waving his phone like a light, as if, you know, you're a comic and someone's saying, hey, get off, wrap it up and get off the stage. But I was already like I had done two bits, I think, and I turned over and I see his phone. Somehow he's written out like an Etch-a-Sketch. It says no cursing. So I told the crowd I think it's because the show was also being streamed to a yet further conservative, offended crowd who's never heard the word shit. But anyway, I should clean up my act anyway. So he was flashing it over, and it was just nice to find that out. A third of the way into my set, and I actually listened to the set, and of course, like an asshole, like one of the last things I said was fuck, but I was not trying to be a provocative jerk. I listened to my set on the way down back to the city. And I can hear him. My phone I left off stage because the sound was so loud that it would have recorded anywhere. I could have left it out in front of the theater and it would have picked it up. Normally I would just leave it on the stool to record it. But I was listening to the beginning of the set and I can hear him laughing. And as the set goes on, his laughter is declining. And I know it's perfectly correlated with the amount of shit and fuck that I might have said, which was simply a product of being out of practice and just not having my bits honed and not being hyper clear about what I'm doing. So it's going to be like, and this fucking guy, like that kind of thing, which is just unnecessary and unprofessional, quite frankly. It's really unprofessional if he asked me not to curse, but I don't remember getting that. So it was really fun. And then after I drove back down to the city and went to the Punchline and caught Mike Albanese's late set Friday night. And that might have been the most fun I've ever had in the Punchline, and I didn't even do a spot. There were a bunch of people in town. There were a bunch of people, New Yorkers, former Atlanta people who lived in New York, who live in New York, were back and in the room. There were a couple other comics because Mike Albanese is, from here and now lives in New York. So it's just great to see everybody. And Lee Kimbrell's down from Cincinnati. And we were just having a blast. We were talking shit in the green room during Mike's set. We weren't watching any of it, Mike. No, we were talking shit in the green room. And then we went out because it sounded really good. Like, Mike was doing really well. And he was. And then it was just like a saloon. The crowd was fucking smashed. And everything Mike was orchestrating, the crowd work and their drunken shenanigans perfectly. And it was just like, it was so fun. I left there so excited. It was just like so much fun to be part of. It's just the best, man. Stand up. It's like Mike is orchestrating these drunk people, and Mike says something about cocaine, and this, you know, 35-year-old woman's like, cocaine. It's like she's hearing it's like a balloon or cotton candy. She's so excited, and the crowd is smashed, and we're just dying, and we're had a great time, and comedy's the best. So please come see a show wherever I said you can see me this weekend at the Laughing Skull, and then Limerick Junction. Come on, let's go Limerick, and have a great week. And I really, really am grateful for the support. And I'm going to go have a blood transfusion because I have had a lot of caffeine. But enjoy your week, and I'll talk to you on Friday. Bye.